Matt Fry on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker now. Just say, play LBC.
And I'm happy to say it's that time of the week and that time of the morning where the sun rises over Washington and Simon Marks is there in front of the White House, which he is not yet living in, but you never know. One day that might change. Because, Simon, it's good to have you on the programme. I mean, Victor Gao compared me to Abraham Lincoln. Which president are you going to compare me to? Don't say President Garfield.
I would never pick a bone with Victor Gao, but I think you're more of a Teddy Roosevelt character, really, Matt. I mean, and the man who got us into all of this difficulty in the first place, the man who expanded America's territory and made it into the major power that President Xi evidently, over the last few days, was suggesting that China is now ready to supplant.
Indeed. Thank you very much for that. That's great. At least you didn't say, was it President Garfield? When Dorothy Parker was told about President Garfield dying, she said, how could you tell? He wasn't one of the more, you know, the more charismatic occupants of that office. So let's start with the summit then. China-US summit, arguably the most important meeting on the planet between the two most important powers. I noticed, by the way, I hadn't clocked this earlier, that when Elon Musk and all the other, you know, princes of Silicon Valley and Wall Street turned up, Elon took his son along as well. There's little Elon, yes. Mini Elon, running around behind him. I mean, that does show you some power, doesn't it? Because if I was invited to the Great Hall of the People, I'm sure I couldn't take any of my kids along.
Yeah, absolutely extraordinary, that, I thought. I mean, as extraordinary as when we saw Elon Musk's son, who I think then was 5, now is 6, in the Oval Office, playing at the feet of Donald Trump. But look, I mean, the Chinese saw Donald Trump coming, and they essentially forced him to talk about the one thing he really didn't want to talk about, which was Taiwan. And we know this because on the previous two occasions when Trump and Xi have held face-to-face talks on the sidelines of other international events, asked afterwards what was said about Taiwan, the Americans have said, oh, it didn't come up. Taiwan didn't come up, which always seemed a pretty credulous thing to be claiming. This time round, not only do we know that Taiwan came up, but from Donald Trump's evolving telling of what took place in Beijing, actually now he seems to be indicating it was pretty much the only thing that President Xi wanted to talk about. And yet, in the official readouts of that first meeting that they had, the main conversation of the summit, the Chinese readout talks all about Taiwan. The Americans don't mention it. I mean, you can't wish this thing away. The president is coming back here, has come back here now, with a big decision to make about that $14 billion congressionally green-lit arms sale to Taiwan. And President Xi is saying, lovely to see all of these captains of tech and industry, smashing to see Elon Musk's son tripping through the Hall of the People, all of that stuff, terrific. But I'm not really interested in talking about that unless and until you give me exactly what I want on Taiwan, which is basically a promise not to engage in defending the island when, and it is when, it's not if, there is Chinese military action to bring the island back into the mainland's aegis. So President Xi has put Donald Trump in the tightest of spots, because if he wants to capitalize on what he keeps telling Americans is this fabulous, warm relationship, he's a very good friend of mine, President Xi is not going to bend on that. And all of those captains of industry that were hoping to come back with million-dollar deals in their back pockets arising out of their 48-hour sojourn in China, virtually all of them were disappointed because the Chinese are saying, this is our line. Do not cross it. And unless and until we know what you're going to do about it, all the rest of this stuff is background noise.
So it's their Strait of Hormuz, isn't it? I mean, unless you can deal with that line, you're not going to get your 500 Boeing Supermax jets bought by the Chinese. You're not going to get these amazing AI deals, et cetera, et cetera. I just wonder to what extent Trump's comment on Air Force One to Sean Hannity of Fox News that, you know, more or less, and I'm paraphrasing, why would I fly 9,000 miles to pick a fight with China over an island like Taiwan? Do you think that, which is a really alarming thing for the Taiwanese for him to say, will that survive the backlash he's going to get when Air Force One lands in Washington from Republicans and Democrats. The one thing they agree on is that China is a competitor and stroke a foe.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most dangerous place in Washington to be this weekend is going to be in the space between Lindsey Graham and the White House, the senator from South Carolina, hugely influential as a foreign policy voice in Donald Trump's ear and a real hawk. He's already worried that Donald Trump has bottled it in Iran and hasn't yet engaged in toppling the regime there. The idea that Donald Trump was indicating evolving thinking on his part regarding whether he's going to stand up for Taiwan when push comes to shove, even kind of hoping in that interview aboard Air Force One that hopefully this isn't going to happen on his watch. Well, American intelligence has predicted 2027 is potentially the year when the Chinese go after it. So Republicans, I think, are going to make a beeline for him and try and put lead in his pencil. But you know, as you just were observing earlier, he's only ever as good as the last voice he's heard. And I think this is going to be very problematic for him.
Now, he was also going to discuss, you know, Iran, and I think they did discuss the war in Iran. They did discuss, you know, helping to open the Strait of Hormuz. But I think beyond kind of vague commitments from the Chinese, who rely on the Strait more than America does in very narrow export terms, I don't think the Chinese really offered much of a concession there. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has said that he would accept a 20-year suspension by Iran of its nuclear enrichment program, which is you know, a hell of a lot longer than what Barack Obama you know, accepted. So, I mean, this is, you know, is this going anywhere? Is Trump making concessions to Iran that the Iranians are not prepared to deal with?
Well, he comes back, obviously, to face the Iran crisis afresh. But I think it is worth making the point, Matt, that on two occasions now, once before he left Washington for China, and then again on Air Force One, he has indicated that the financial distress that American voters are suffering here in the United States as a result of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, soaring fuel prices, soaring jet fuel prices, is of no concern to him. He said, I don't even think about it when I'm making policy towards Iran.
And on the one hand,
you say, that's crazy. That's mad, right? Just a matter of 6 months before midterm elections. Why on earth would you say that? But the flip side to that coin is that you then see Donald Trump in his element in Beijing, surrounded by the captains of industry and tech here, who are super cool about whether the Strait of Hormuz reopens or not. Stock market's up. The price of oil is obviously through the roof. That's fantastic news for America's oil behemoths. There is no question that the United States is now profiteering out of its own war in Iran by raking in the cash for all the American oil that it is now selling to other countries, potentially even including China. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, talking about increasing the amount of oil that they pump up in Alaska in order to satisfy Chinese demand. So there's a real contradiction here between an American president and his fellow Republican lawmakers who see their fate absolutely being questioned in November as a result of the economic distress that American voters are feeling, and the very powerful, influential and wealthy voices in his ear who, at a Milken Institute meeting out in Santa Barbara just a few days ago, were saying, you know what, we're doing fine. We don't really worry about this war. Yeah. We don't really care about the Strait of Hormuz. For the 1%, this is fantastic. And so there's a contradiction there that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to take the first available off-ramp in Iran to alleviate the pain of the voters who maybe in November, depending on the circumstances of the midterm elections here, are going to end up deciding the balance of power in Congress.
I was going to ask you about the midterm elections and the US Supreme Court ruling that rebuffs Virginia Democrats in their bid to redraw the voting maps, but I haven't got time for that. We've run out. Simon, as ever, an absolute pleasure to talk to you on a Saturday morning. He gets up very early for us, and we love him for it.